It's the moleful time of the year, with the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest season of all, with those holiday greetings and gay happy meetings when friends come to call. It's the happiest season of all. Parties for hosting, marshmallows for toasting, and caroling out in the snow. There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
And it certainly is the most wonderful time of the year. 17 minutes past the hour here at WWGH Radio. Holy moly, we are just 7 days away from Christmas Eve, 8 days away from Christmas, the big day. Wow. And what does Christmas represent on so many levels? It represents family. Now, a quick programming note. Tomorrow on this show at 1:10, we're going to be joined by the amazing Kreskin. Remember him from Johnny Carson and a whole host of other programs, David Letterman. He's going to give his predictions for 2019 tomorrow at 1:10 p.m. Then on Wednesday, the Queen of Helpful Hints, Heloise, from Good Housekeeping Magazine, will give you all those hints to make your holiday party and New Year's party a success, as well as maybe some of you last-minute shoppers who haven't been to the store yet. Heloise, Wednesday, 12:10 to 1 p.m. So we've got a great week and a few more guests sprinkled in. But this hour, as I say, when it's the holiday time, you have to go to your guests who feel like family. And this man feels like family to me every time he's on. We have no agenda set when we go to the phones. It is live radio right now, so anything can happen in the next 43 minutes. You probably remember him best for his... he's been everywhere. On the stage with Old Calcutta. He's been in the movies, The Jerk, and Analyze This, and of course, probably best known for his TV work for 6 seasons on a top 10 television show alongside B. Arthur. The series was Maude. He was Walter Finley, her counterpart. God'll get you for that, Walter. What a pleasure it is here in the holiday season to welcome Bill Macy. Bill, how are you?
Hello there. How are you?
Oh, I am great. You sound up.
I am up because of that music that you just kept playing while you were trying to talk.
Well, I know you hate my theme song, so I thought we'd change it up.
Yeah, but it was so loud and I could hardly hear what you were saying.
Well, it's the most wonderful time of the year, Bill.
I see. You want to just obliterate the sensibilities of your listeners. That's okay. It's your program.
Well, you know, I try. Bill...
You're doing very well. Look, you got me on.
Well, you know, that's an A-plus guest. As far as I'm concerned, I could go home right now and just leave you to talk.
No. I don't want to do anything like that because, you know, I could sometimes get into profanity, and I don't want to do that. I respect everybody in Ohio, especially the people in Cleveland, because Sandy Sprinkling, I met her in New York, and we went back to Cleveland to get married, and then one night, listen to how I'm talking. Isn't it ridiculous? It's just, you let me go, and I keep on going into crazy things. But anyway, she woke one night after we got married about a year later, and she said, I had a dream about a blackbird in the cage, and the cage opened, and she flew away, and she said, goodbye, Bill.
Oh.
I must have said that before, right?
Well, you might have, but it's good because, see, this is like the holidays. This is what happens at the holidays. You get together with family, and you tell stories that you've heard before, but they're nonetheless entertaining.
I agree. And, you know, most of the time when I speak to you, I can't help but be entertaining. In fact, you sent me a letter recently. It's in the drawer someplace. I don't know where it is at the moment. That said some things that made me not blush, but really appreciate your friendship.
Well, I appreciate.
You remember the letter?
Well, I do remember the letter, and I think it's poignant because there are very few people who you can go to. Because you know this, Bill, when you have a talk show and you do this day in and day out, there's only so far you can go. So when you get a guest who you can call that's going to be 100% every time, and we're not just going to be all wrapped up in the career and there's no bumpers, those people become very precious to you, and that's okay. What you are.
Yeah, okay, and that's because I'm 96, and I don't know if I'll make it to 97, but I'm going to try to. And so that's one of the reasons that I keep on taking your calls two or three times a year, because nobody wants me in the business anymore. I'm PO'd about that.
No, I think somebody might want you, don't you think?
Well, where the hell is the phone call? My agent, I'm just, you're my call. You're my theatrical and experience, for crying out loud. I'm a little miffed. I'm trying to stay away from vulgarity, by the way.
Well, it's interesting. I want to get this out of the way because you very kindly, about 3 months ago, sent me a copy, a CD, of the Gilbert Godfrey podcast.
Oh, I love that. That was the best. Despite the fact that I love being with you, that 1 hour with Gilbert was the best hour in my entertainment life because he permitted me to just rip.
Yes.
Can you play that on the air?
Well, I could play, like, maybe every other word, but see, that's what I want to let the audience know, is that if you want to hear Bill Macy uncensored, because it's not over the radio waves and governed by the FCC.
Oh, I see. It's governed.
We're governed here by the federal government. But
I didn't know.
Gilbert is a podcast. So you can say all those words that George Carlin, you know, you can't say, and you do, Bill, in that podcast.
Yeah, so tell your audience then to find the podcast 172 with Bill Macy, and the host is Gilbert Gottfried.
Gilbert?
It is hilarious.
It's a wonderful example. I didn't know you knew most of those words, Bill. Now, Bill, you're 96 years old, as we've discussed. You're heading into your 97th year, five months away. What does Christmas time mean to you? Your 96th Christmas.
Well, it makes me think of my father, who said to me when I was 11, I was born in 22, so in 1933... my father was a very religious man, and he said, Bill, let's go to the synagogue, and he wanted me to accompany him. And we went, it was on 53rd in Brooklyn, maybe Snyder Avenue, something like that. I can't remember every little thing. And so anyway, we went over there to the synagogue, and there was a gentleman at the door who wouldn't let us get in because he says, it's $5 today. What? My father said, I this is my synagogue. I play here regularly. He said, you can't get in today. You have to pay $5. The synagogue was raising money to keep the synagogue going. Well, anyway, I didn't understand what was going on, but I looked at my father, and there was a sense of embarrassment on his face. I didn't understand why. He didn't have money, because in 1933, we were just poor. Well, I remembered that. And so I sort of didn't particularly enjoy that experience. And then as I grew older and I was seeing in the papers, there was all kinds of war, religious wars, and so I really didn't like that. And Christmas makes me think of those things because it's a holiday for people, and it's got the word Christ in it, who was a Jew, and I don't know what else. I've never come to any definitive thing, except that I keep on getting these thoughts.
Now,
that's about it, Scott.
So, well, there's nothing worse at the holiday time than a cover charge at the synagogue. Oh, my. Hopefully that doesn't go on. Now, you being a New Yorker, Christmas time is usually a big deal in New York. Now, was it in those days?
Well, it may have been. I never had any money either. Whatever the day, whatever the holiday, it didn't make any difference. I was one of the poor, ill-educated, unsophisticated boys from Brooklyn, and when I was 20, they drafted me in 1942, and I was in the service, and I didn't really know what was going on in the world. And the first sergeant, I'll never forget this, he would always say, "Bill, sit down over here. I want to put my arm around your neck." And he would talk to me. He says, "Bill, what's going on? What's wrong with you?" I couldn't even give him a good answer. I just was, I was always illogical. I'm having difficulty now trying to put one word after another to make a coherent sentence. And the thing that bothers me most of all, not that it's a major bothering, but I want to present information to your listeners that would be cogent. I like certain words, you know, the words in the dictionary, they just pour out of me like cogent, you know, understandable. But your listeners have to understand that I'm still the guy from Brooklyn, the kid from Brooklyn, who I don't know how to construct a building. I don't know how to construct a pool. I don't know how to make a subway system. I'm just a guy living. I drove a taxi because I could do that. I could drive. I drove a taxi for 12 years. Oh, do you know how that? Does your audience know how I became an actor with that taxi experience?
I don't think we've went over that in a while. That would be good. Now, by the way, did you ever have any experiences at Christmas time involving the taxi company?
You know, I'm going to tell you right to your face, even though I don't see you, but I'm looking at the phone here. You keep on asking me questions about Christmas.
I know.
I wonder why.
It must be the time of year. I think it has something to do
with that. Oh, that's exactly what it is. It's the time of year. Now, what was your question?
When you were driving that taxi cab, did you ever have experiences that would be Christmas-like? People going to get gifts, driving through the city with the tree lit up and all that. Do you remember Christmas in the taxi business?
Your question is more full than my response. I don't remember.
Well, here's something I remember, Bill, and we're going to come back to this taxi thing. I remember an episode of Maude, and they'll probably run it sometime this holiday season, in which you, Walter Finley, were throwing a Christmas party at the Maude house. And you
remember that either.
Oh, this was a good episode. I think it was mid-70s. And it's one of my favorite episodes of Maude. And Maude's outspoken friend is also invited to this Christmas party. And
uh-huh.
you're worried that she's going to ruin it by, you know, being outspoken at the Christmas party. And that was a Christmas episode of Maude that I remember.
Oh. Well, you're young, so you can remember more things than I can. You know, I'm lucky that I remember that you said to me, "Bill, I'd like to talk to you Monday at 10 o'clock.
But you did, so we're good.
I had said a half a dozen notes around the house. A piece of paper says, "Bill, you're going to get called from Scott in the morning." And here's Bill, here's another note. I have to remember, I need prodding. Well, and you're a good prodder.
Well, I'm going to prod you one more time here. Because
come on.
We won't go back to 75. We'll only go back about 12 years. You were in a movie that a lot of people will show this Christmas called The Holiday.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
I can tell you who was in the movie. May I?
Please do.
Kate Winslet, English actress, right?
That's right.
I forget the other female star's name. Can you tell me who it was?
Cameron Diaz.
Yeah, Cameron Diaz. And what was the English actor's name when they switched the countries?
Let's see. Who was the big
one? I was just a friend of Eli Wallach. Eli Wallach was a screenwriter in Hollywood, and Kate Winslet befriended him, and I was a friend of Eli's. I forget his name in the show.
Ernie.
I read for that part, and I didn't get it, but I was happy just to be working. And then Eli is not with us anymore. Everybody dies. You know, the nature makes it like that. And but I'm going to be stubborn. I may go for another, whatever it is, 96. I may go for 14. No, 4 years. I may go for 4 years. I'll make it a centennial.
Well, that'll be good. You were Ernie in that movie, but this may be more important for the holiday season. You were also in a movie called Saving Christmas, or Surviving Christmas, excuse me, Surviving.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
Surviving Christmas?
Yes.
Who was in that one?
That was Ben Affleck and James
Gandolfini. Right, and wasn't there a big stout guy that died in Europe?
Yes, James Gandolfini.
James Gandolfini, a lovely person. I remember he gave me a jacket because I didn't have enough clothing. We went to Chicago to do some scenes. They spread snow blocks around so the camera would pick up. There was no snow in Chicago at this particular time. And so these cameras spread, the people that worked for the company spread snow. I don't know what the snow was composed of, but it was white for blocks. That so if you were standing in the street talking to somebody, and the camera would see you, but it would also see beyond you, so it would be authentic for Christmas. That's how they made movies.
Well, that's a good
Surviving Christmas. Didn't I play Duda in that?
You were Duda. Now tell people who Duda was.
I don't remember. Just a character that interfered with people's lives. Isn't that right?
I believe so. But it was a good it was a good Christmas character.
Yes, I loved it.
It was a good movie.
Oh, and Samantha was with me, my wife, and we went to the museum there. I remember that. And then we went to a good restaurant there once. We had a good meal there. See, I only remember it in general terms. I don't remember the specifics. And I feel unfortunate about that because I would just love to remember it as you seem to have. You must be so young because you remember more things than I do.
Well, I think because I was not a part of them. I'm only seeing them. See, you lived it. So, have you ever noticed in your own life you can never remember anything, but if you see something you like, you remember it?
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that's part of it. Like, you saw B. Arthur every day for 6 years, so that was no big deal for you. But for other people who didn't see her, that would be a big deal.
Does your audience know about the hot pastrami sandwich that I used to bring to her Friday?
Tell that. That's a good story.
It's a true story, and I just love it. We didn't know each other when we were cast, but maybe I just heard her say one day, I love hot pastrami. So on in Beverly Hills area, adjacent to Los Angeles, there was a delicatessen, a Jewish delicatessen. I'm going back now to 1972. What year is it now? It's now 19. What year are we in now?
2018.
Wow. How many years is that? That's 72, 28, 46 years
46
ago. Holy
years
moly.
Ago. Holy.
I can still remember it. So anyway, every Friday we would tape the show at CBS on Beverly and Fairfax, and this Jewish deli was on Olympic in Fairfax, called the Bagel. We just went by there the other day, my wife and I. It's now Ethiopian neighborhood. So anyway, I would get a hot pastrami on Ride or Go, and I would bring it to her in the dressing room. She would be getting into makeup and so on and so forth, and I'd give her the hot pastrami. I gave her 143 hot pastramis every Friday, and she would get it and then open up and look at it and smell it and then go like this. and I would get a little taste of it every so often.
Now, Bill, Bea Arthur, people remember her very well. What did she have any idiosyncrasies on the set? Was she a pretty normal lady?
Well, she was normal, I guess.
Rue McClanahan.
I don't know. When you say idiosyncrasies, it's a beautiful word. What is it about?
Like, did she have any particular things that are odd that she would do that maybe most people wouldn't do?
Oh, I see. I can't remember.
You know, I met B. I met Bea Arthur twice, and I think I've told this
story. Did?
Yes, I met
when?
Bea. Well, she was out touring with her one-person show.
When? Before Maud?
No, this was after Maud. This would have been...
I had no idea.
Yeah, she did a one-person show. She went all around the country, and I saw it when it was in Ohio. Oh, I met her three times, as a matter of fact. In Ohio, and then I met her in Toronto, and then I met her in New York when it was on Broadway. And
you know, you sound like a guest on my program.
Well, this is good. This is the Bill Macy Hour.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, no, because here's what I remember about Bea Arthur. Not that she had any idiosyncrasies, but we were up in Toronto, and it was actually during Christmas time, like this time of year, and I saw her show.
Yeah.
And then she invited us up to her dressing room after the show. And
wow.
Somebody said, let's get a picture. Okay. Well, the guy who was taking the picture, I don't know who he was, but he could not get everybody in the shot. Because, you know, nobody wanted to get too close to B because we didn't want to crowd her. So he's doing this. And finally, she grabbed everybody from behind and pulled him in. And she said, get in here. And
yeah,
I just found her to be a very loving, kind. But
that's a great story about her. That's so, so true. That's the way she was on the show also.
And I have
naturally, you didn't want to be naughty. And she would occasionally tell me, tell that guy to wait after he delivers the line, or when I deliver a line, because there's going to be a big laugh there. So I would go over to a guest artist that was on the show that week, and I'd say, sir, or whatever his name was, Jimmy, Freddie, whatever, there's a line here that you got, so somebody else's, I forget exactly what, but don't step into the laugh. There's going to be a big laugh there.
You know what's funny?
Nobody heard what we said. They would always step into the laugh. They just didn't understand that this community of actors, we just loved to make the audience laugh. Oh, can I tell a story about a 60-second laugh?
Go ahead.
She complained to me, Walter, she said, you make all the money, you provide all the food, you pay the rent, and so I don't earn a penny, and I'm terrible. I feel terrible about it because I'm not contributing to the welfare of our home. And she went on and on and on like that. And finally, when she stopped, I said, I'll give you $5 to put on your dress. The audience laughed for 60 seconds. After they finished laughing, she looked at me and she said, God will get you for that, Walter. They left another 30 seconds.
that
was so much fun.
There's something I want to ask you about we've never talked about, but I'm going to get to that in a minute, because you just triggered something. I had blocked this out, but there was a fourth time that I interviewed Bea Arthur on a stage in Michigan. And I remember this now, because we were talking, and she was a big member of PETA, which is against animal cruelty. And she was talking about that in the interview, and I said to her, she was worried about how they were treating chickens at Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Oh,
wow. So during the interview, I said to the audience, I said, don't eat the chicken. And she misheard what I said, and she thought I said, you don't eat chicken. So she looked at me horrified, and she said, and she clutched her chest, and she said, you don't eat chicken? And I said, oh, no, no, I said, don't eat the chicken. And she said, oh, okay, okay. Yeah, but that's my remembrance. I scared her, and I always felt bad about that.
What I remember also about her was that once in a while, I would pick her up in my car for some reason that she didn't drive that day, or nobody drove her, and I would drive her to work. And, of course, we didn't live too far apart from each other. I think it was at that time, early in the 70s, I think I lived out towards Santa Monica, and that's toward the water and all, you know. And we got along famously because we were friendly. Oh, I have to tell the audience, before we became friendly, what she said to me in her pointed sense of humor. We had just started the show called Maud, and about two or three weeks into the show, we finished the work one night, and we were working over at Beverly and Fairfax, the CBS studio there, and we finished the work that night, and we got on the elevator. We were on the second floor, and we had to go down to the ground floor, and the elevator was the slowest moving elevator in the world. Anyway, we got on, and there's only two of us on. We had just finished our work. And we didn't say anything to each other. So somewhere in the middle of that ride down from second floor to the first floor, she looks at me and she says, Bill, I'm having trouble reminding myself of what I, 96 is terrible. Hey, Scott, I have to apologize.
No, I'll come in here for a second because I have a B. Arthur elevator story. This is good. This is like a B. Arthur day. She liked to tell this story because she told it to me more than once. But it's a good story, so I'll tell it now. You remember the actor Hal Linden, who was on Barney Miller? Remember
yeah,
that?
We watch him every night.
Yes. Well, she was telling me, she told me this story. She said they were both, she was doing Maude, and he was doing Barney Miller, and they were both doing the Tony Awards in New York that year. Uh-huh. So she said they were going to rehearsal, and they got on an elevator with a guy. And he said the guy turned around and just said, oh my goodness, I can't believe I'm in the elevator with Barney Miller. Oh my good, Hal Linden, Barney Miller. It's my favorite show. I love it. And never said anything to her.
Right.
And the guy gets off the elevator and she said, I was hurt. So they do the rehearsal, her and Hal Linden part ways. She comes down the elevator and the guy that they had rode up with was working at the hot dog stand outside of the Tony Awards place. And she's coming out of the building, and all of a sudden she sees the guy get all worked up. Now it's just her now, Hal Linden. And she's coming out, and the guy's getting worked up and go, oh my goodness, oh my goodness, oh my goodness. And she said, well, I felt now it's my time. And he pointed to her and said, I know you. You were in the elevator with Hal Linden. And she liked to tell that story.
That's a great story. Here's the one I remember, the line. She said, Bill, you're like a rock. Despite your lack of humor, you're like a rock. I remember that line. See, that's what happens when you get to be aging. I'm 96, and I was trying to tell you that story, and suddenly I couldn't tell you that story about a minute ago. Can imagine how I'm going to, if you're going to interview me in about three or four more years, when I'm 100, my God, I have no idea if I'll be able to even talk to you sensibly.
Well, here's what I'm going to ask you now, because I hope this memory sticks out, because there's only two people left who can tell this story, and it would be...
Who's the two?
You and Adrienne Barbeau, because everybody else is
gone. I don't see her anymore, but I understand she's most likely around 70, because she was around 25 when in 1972... And she's got three sons that must be all grown. So I interrupted you. Go ahead.
So you have to tell me because I don't have Adrienne Barbeau's phone number. So you're the only one who can tell this story.
I don't have her phone number either. I don't fraternize.
Well,
I'm friendly when I see people and so on and so forth. But I don't go out of my way to have dinner and so on and so forth. I live a very cloistered kind of a life.
Well, that's okay.
You want to hear about it? Did I tell you about it before?
No, tell me about it.
I get up, have a little something in the house, or get a lettuce wrap from a local place, and I get into the car, and I drive maybe 45, 80 minutes, whatever it is, and I go to the Hustler Casino in Gardena, which is 25 miles from Beverly Hills. I played for 2 hours only, from 10:30 to 12:30, and I leave, and about a half an hour later, I'm at the Hollywood Park Casino, and I play there for 2 hours. I leave there at 2:30, and I get home at 4 o'clock, because I cannot drive at night, and I can't drive during dusk, because my eyes have, I've lost acuity, which is the sharpness and the perception and so on. I don't want to get hurt, and I don't want to hurt anybody else. So that's my regular routine. And of course, it's interrupted every so often by chores that my wife asks me to do, or something else that I have to do that's more important than going to the casino. And then when I come home, it's really dull. I have to watch television. My God, it's the commercials are driving me up the wall. And then music and quit cutting and I'm making myself a pain in the butt to your audience talking about things like that. But that's the truth of myself. It's just miserable with have to listen to that because I can't do anything at night. I can't drive. I can't go out and have a good time. I have to sit around and wait for the next day to come along.
Well, that's are the casinos decorated for the holiday season?
Well, I don't look at anything else except my cards.
Well, here's the story that only you can tell, Bill. Because I've learned that the most memorable voted on episode of Maude was the one with John Wayne. Now, do you remember that?
Wait a minute. I remember a little bit that when Norman Lear, who was... I'm trying to find a word that's proper for your audience. He was sort of like, he wanted to be liked by John Wayne. And so I forget the word, but he went up to him and he called him Duke. And at that point, Mr. Wayne had a cup of coffee in his hand and he slammed it down on the table. And he said, my name is John Wayne, not Duke.
Oh.
Wow, I love that because I hated Norman in his way he tried to befriend this actor, you know?
You know, Bill, here's something. I have a clip from that show. Do you want to hear this clip?
Yeah, well, John was just Mr. Wayne, John Wayne. I call him like those names, like Mr. Wayne, because... As an actor, I respect my fellow actors.
Well,
pardon me?
Well, this is one of them. This is about a minute and 30 seconds. This is one.
You want to play it for me?
Yeah, this might bring back some memories. This
Go
is
ahead.
One of the most famous moments in television history. It's called Maude Meets John Wayne.
Oh, I love it. Go ahead.
Here it is.
With the Duke of Wayne, I have no intention of standing around here mooning over some celebrity like the rest of you. I am the only one here who is behaving in a calm, sane way. I am.
The way the world's going today, lady, I believe you.
I'm the real Arthur Harmon. She's a woman. Howdy.
Howdy, hi. Hello, folks.
Hi!
Hey, Colin's Cowboy Corral, right?
Right. The guns came with it.
Oh, great. Well, don't worry about that. It's a good thing you're not a surgeon.
I'm Dr. Harmon's best friend. Walter Findlay, the appliance dealer?
Uh-huh.
If your horse ever needs an electric feed bag, I could probably get it for you wholesale.
Who's the little woman?
It takes a big man to call Maud the little woman. She's my wife.
Oh, well,
Miss Vivian, my ball and chain.
You're funny.
What is this really nice thing? This is,
It's a good scene. Big laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
When he walked in, do you remember that?
No.
You had a good line there. You said,
I don't remember.
You said, I can get your horse an electric feeder. That was good.
Well, you're young and you have a better memory than I do, and I'm not embarrassed by the fact I'm being very straightforward and honest, because I would imagine that some of your listeners are aged also. Not all of your listeners are like in their 10s and teens and 20s and 30s and 40s. Some of your listeners in Ohio and elsewhere that your broadcast would reach are maybe in 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s also. And I respect that fact so much that when I speak to you, it's an honor and a privilege when you call me and say, speak to me on certain days because I want my audience to hear you and I have this conversation. And you have no idea. I mean, I just love it. It's like one of the highlights of my life because I'm telling people that I don't even know physically and personally how a person feels about the life on the planet, even though I was lucky enough to be acting in different situations, Maud and some couple of movies that I did and so on. But over the period of time, that's all incidental to the appreciation of, that's my Christmas story right there. The appreciation of the existence of the human being on the planet. That's only the incidental of the planet, the human being, because the planet, when it originally started some billions of years ago, and then every so often I see on the Yosemite or something, rocks and rivers and glaciers and so on. It's amazing. It blows my mind. And then it sounds crazy and infantile because there's bees, there's ants, there's trees, there's cockroaches, there's every imaginable thing on this planet. And so I just love everything that I'm talking to your audience about. In fact, it's hard to say I love your audience, but I love people. But you can't, like, generally say I love each and every specific one. But yes, I do. I love the people on the planet. I just love... I love you most of all, because you keep calling me, and you elicit from me this kind of a crazy feeling.
Well, Bill, this is what I feel will happen one day. One day, we'll bring this show in the next 4 years to California. And then you'll
get out.
Yes, yes.
How can you do that?
Well, we'll just, hook the wires up, and we'll be able to head on out there. And then you'll be able to come down. Like, we'll probably stay for a week, I would imagine.
You have to live in my house.
I'll have to live. Yeah, that'll save us money. You can have me over. And then we'll do the show, and every day you will be the co-host, and we'll invite, your various Hollywood people over.
Wow. Wow.
Now, see, isn't that an idea?
I accept. It's your idea. You can be the producer. I accept. I'll just do whatever you ask me to do.
See, that'll be good because we'll 5 days, you'll come down 2 hours every afternoon at this time, and you'll co-host with me, and we'll get the people who we have on, like, Marla Gibbs. She's a good friend of this show. We'll get Marla on one day, and we'll have a conversation with her, And then maybe we'll get, I'm trying to think of some other people on the West Coast.
Well, we've got to get Adrienne.
Oh, yeah, we'll have to get Adrienne Barbeau's phone number and have her on. But we will not invite Norman Lear on, because I think there's some friction there.
Yeah, I don't like him. You know, does your audience want to hear something about him, how naughty he is?
Go right ahead.
He's most likely a millionaire or a billionaire right now, and he deserves it. He knows how to go about making money. But he took advantage of me when we first signed our contract in 1972. I don't know why I didn't have an agent in the room with me when I signed the contract. But he said, look, Bill, this show may go into syndication if it's successful. And if it does, there's a thing called residuals if they show it again after the show is off the air. And I'll give you in the contract here the first year of residuals, but I'll take the rest. I didn't know what he was talking about. I said, okay. So I got maybe $20, $30 a show when it went on the air after 1978, and it was shown in different places. But he got all of the residuals since 1979 until today. So he never even called me to say, Bill, do you need a buck?
Well, that's awful.
And I do. I don't win at the casino all the time. So he's not nice about that. He's avaricious with his money.
We'll scratch him from the guest list for that reason, because now Marla, I think she would be good. I think that Larry Merchant from HBO, he's a good guest. He's a good friend. He's out there in California. And we'll get Adrienne Barbeau. We'll have to track her down. And we'll find some other people. Bob Barker. Oh, Norman Lloyd. Norman Lloyd's 104. He's out there.
Is that a fact?
Yeah, Norman Lloyd.
I had him on your show?
Yeah. Do you remember Saint Elsewhere? He was in Saint Elsewhere.
Yeah, I think I just saw a picture of him recently. 104?
104.
Holy moly, and he's still alive.
Still alive and still...
We've got to get him on.
Yeah, won't that... You know, if we have him and you on in the same day, the combined age will be 200 years old. Between two people.
Let's do it.
Boy, I'll tell you, that'll be a show. So we'll have him on. You know, oh, right, there's your week. Norman Lloyd, Marla Gibbs, Larry Merchant, Adrienne Barbeau. And
so what hotel are you going to stay at?
Well, we have to have a good one, because we'll be broadcasting from the lobby, I would imagine.
No kidding.
Well, you'd have to. That's what we did when we went to New York. We took the show to New York and had Phil Donahue and Dick Cavett, and we did it from a hotel.
Really?
Yeah, it was good.
And the people that were in the hotel, they just saw you do the show?
Yeah, well, they liked it, because when Phil Donahue came in, you know, they got autographs and pictures.
I get it. I see, yeah.
So it was good for them. It'll be good for
let's
us.
Let's do it.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll set that up for 2019. That'll be our goal before 2019. Now, Bill, last time you were on the show, you sang. Do you know any Christmas songs?
Oh, wow. I don't know if I know any. What did I sing the last time? Do you remember?
You sang a song that your
About
mother used to
nine,
sing.
About a quarter to nine, maybe?
No, that your mother used to sing you.
Oh, I know. I'll sing my favorite song. Not that my mother used to sing to me, but we had a Victrola. I was born in 1922, and it's a totally different time than present time. Anyway, so in the house in Brooklyn, there was a Victrola. I have no idea how it got there. My father maybe picked it up someplace. It was a standing thing that you had to wind and crank it to get the motor going, and you put a record on, and one of the songs on it was Lena, the Queen of Palestina. Did I ever do that for you?
No, you did, but do it. I love it. Go ahead.
Yeah. This is my Christmas song to everybody in Ohio. In the Bronx of New York City lives a girl, so pretty. Lena is her name. Such a girl as keen as Lena. How she plays the concertina. Really, is a shame. They say that Lena is the queen of Palestine, just because she plays the concertina. She only knows one song. She plays it all day long. Sometimes she plays it wrong, but how they love it, want more of it. I heard her play once or twice. Ooh, 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 murder. Still, it was nice. All the girls are dressed like Lena. Some wear oatmeal, some farina. Down old Palestina way.
That's great. We have a musical act today. That's good. Bill.
You know, Scott, you're unique that you would permit what we just did.
No, that was good. Because I'm sure that nobody, that's not happening on any other show in the world right now.
That's exactly right.
And we're.
Every time that you and I speak, Scott, it's a beginning of creation for us.
Well, I here's what I think. I think you and Norman Lloyd should do a show together.
Where is he? I don't know where he is.
Well, he's out there, and he's an actor, and he's 104. So you know,
you have to contact him, and most likely, I don't want to embarrass a fellow actor.
No.
So you and I, we get along because we do.
We do.
But I don't know these other people.
Norman's a nice man. I think we could swing it. You know, Kay Ballard, she's out there. I bet she would. She's from Ohio.
Well, I don't know these people. I mean, I may have seen them when I was a young person. I looked at television and so on and so forth. But I would admit to you and your audience that I'm square about the much things that are on the planet that I love so much.
Well, you're never square on this show, Bill. And I hope we talk again soon, and I hope you have a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holiday, and we will talk again very soon, I'm sure.
Thank you so much. I love you.
I love you, Bill. Have a good holiday.
Thank you. You too, Bobby.
The wonderful Bill Macy. We're done for the day. Voice of a People, 4:10 to 5 p.m.
Water Street. Our Sunday morning service is at 10:30. We have Sunday school at 9:30 in the morning. Evening service at 6:30, along with youth group at the same time. We do have a midweek. You can reach us at 740-490.